Hello, and welcome to Arcane Connection Episode 8, or the one in which CJ tries to get Kev's sides to swear to the oath of Hermes. Well, actually not Kevin, but one of his characters, Yarnus. I worked out yesterday that since we started playing Ars Magica, me and Kevin must have played over 1,000 games together. We've run about 1,300 games, I think, now.
I'm told, yeah.
Yeah, possibly slightly more than that. So, Kev, what percentage, roughly, do you think somebody in the party broke the order of the Code of Hermes in one of those stories?
Deliberately and involuntarily, I would say probably about 80% of the time.
Yeah, and how many times was there a successful tribunal prosecution?
Do you know, I don't think we've ever had a successful tribunal prosecution for the party.
You have been fined weese in the past.
Have we? I don't recall.
You've been
fined. Was it the token fine level for doing something heinous, like normal?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So...
yes, here, have some more bits, there you go.
The actual reason I thought of Kevin today was, well, I invited Kev along, is because if anyone's characters are notorious for breaking the Code of Hermes, is it really Kevin? Yeah, perhaps.
Thank you. Stop
me. I'm joking. It's the style in which we played in Stonehenge, yeah. Loch Legley, and in various tribunals where there is, to be fair, a lax culture of hermetic law enforcement.
There is that,
or
yes.
Should I say hermetic justice. Now, actually, we're not just going to talk about the code, though Kev is going to swear it. We're also going to talk about how the Code of Hermes fits into the game at a different level. And one of the things I've been talking a lot about this week on forums, mainly RPGNet, is to an extent there are rules in the rulebook, which are equations, formula, mechanics that we all know. But there's also second-order rules. And Kev, can you give us an example?
Well, second-order rule is an assumption that is made about how the game is played that is not explicitly stated. So something along the lines of, for example, in Vampire the Masquerade, don't commit diablerie, don't break the masquerade, don't run around and create ghouls willy-nilly, that kind of thing. Things that player characters will do at every opportunity, in essence.
It depends on the player characters. I mean, you know, one of the things you could do before you start your next Ars Magica saga is discuss with the players, firstly, which tribunal they're going to play in, obviously.
Yeah.
Because if it's Loch Legley with only a single Quisitor, or Stonehenge, which is depicted in Heirs to Merlin as being in anarchy.
Three or four total, I think?
Yeah. But, I mean, in a heavily divided political tribunal, obviously, justice comes down to politics.
Yes.
And that's quite an interesting feature of the system. But what I would say is that it might be interesting, because if you'd spent 15 years, assuming you're not a Tutelan, assuming you're not from a House Tutelus...
And assuming you don't use the Flambeau Defence at every opportunity.
Yeah, well, let's say you've spent 15 years in the Order of Hermes, abiding by the code.
Yeah, being trained up as an apprentice.
Yeah. You might actually just take the code so seriously that you wouldn't even think of breaking it. So it might be fun to play a game.
Yeah.
Where people aren't looking at loopholes, like your characters, or aren't looking at avoiding justice, but are trying to obey the letter and the spirit of the code. Aha! Evil transitionalists.
It's the spirit of the code part that's the awful
bit. One of the things that we mistook when we were playtesting a long, long time ago, True Lineages, was everybody liked the transitionalists because they saw them as being, you know, spirit of the code, more generous, more kind.
Wrong way round.
Yeah. The letter of the code lets you get away with a lot more. So the traditionalists are actually, to my mind, far less harsh on transgressors than the transitionalists, who might take the circumstances into account, but you haven't got a loophole defence, have you?
No, you don't get the loophole defence. And, you know, things like, well, I killed everybody in sight. Yes, that doesn't make any difference. Like, somebody a week later walked across and found the burning wreckage of the village. So,
how many people in all the sagas we've played in, and we've played sagas in pretty much every tribunal and some multiple times, I think.
Yeah.
How many people have ever played Quisitors?
I have.
For how long?
It was during playtest, and it was about 6 months.
Okay, so you did play a Quisitor.
Oh, yeah. Admittedly, I wasn't a standard issue one. I was a defence Quisitor. People gave me viz so that I would represent them if it came to tribunal.
Yeah, and that is one of the options for House Guernicus members, is they can do just that.
Exactly.
However, I mean, one of the things I would say, Quisitors haven't always been popular choices of characters in our games.
Usually because you know that the party will basically look at you going, oh dear, the Quisitor saw us do it, we'd better kill him.
Yeah, no, I mean, Julia Rex Miscellania, Lloyd's character in the current game, is actually a non-Guernicus Quisitor.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she has actually got involved in a bit of hermetic justice and in representing the interests of the house. But, yeah, It is unusual. So
in our current game, though, we do basically have a covenant full of hoplites.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is a slightly different viewpoint there, where having your own pet Quisitor is kind of a bonus.
Right, yes. Yeah. You think you've got away with it?
Oh, never.
Recite the oath.
Okay, hold on. Right, for those who want to read along, page 13 of the main rulebook. I, Yarnus, hereby swear my everlasting loyalty to the Order of Hermes and its members. I will not deprive nor attempt to deprive any member of the Order of his magical power.
Stop.
Okay.
Well, we all know what that means, because it's defined on the next page, as I recall.
Just look. There it is.
Deprivation of magical power includes killing Grogs.
Yes, it does.
Now, I mean, if you really want to go into detail on this, there's a wonderful chapter on House Guernicus in True Lineages.
Yeah.
It's a great book, and the code is explained in so much detail there.
Mm.
From a game viewpoint, depriving covenants of their wheat, etc., and people do occasionally try and...
Yeah, stealing biz sources, that kind of thing.
But the stuff that's come up in our games, there's two things I can think of. One of them I remember as being Lord Strathern. Is it? Yeah.
For those who couldn't tell, that was a wince, yes.
Yeah. That was Luke's character, who specialised in Crow Weem and spent his time sending magi he didn't like into Twilight.
And ones he did like.
And ones he did like, yeah. Using the Enigma's Gift, a variant of that, that gave you 2 Twilight points, which was sufficient to throw someone into Twilight.
Warping points, but yeah.
Warping points, yeah, sorry.
Yes, we've been playing that long.
Yeah, it's been playing that. So, yeah. Strathern, as a character, was a blatant breach of the Order of Hermes.
Yeah, but technically he was right. It wasn't actually in the code as a specific thing at the time.
I think casting spells on other magi is assumed to be an offensive act. And that is clearly deprivation if you're sending them into... I mean, you know...
You've just deprived them of time. It's one of those ones where I remember Luke spent a while debating it with me before I even said, okay, fine, go for it in the character.
Tie up a major in your basement or a major in your tower.
Keep going.
Yeah, no, but I mean, that clearly is not acceptable. If you kidnap somebody for a season so they're unable to work on their...
Yeah, that's different.
Now, killing their grogs is an offence.
Yes,
but what about when a grog kills a magi? When a grog... Oh, let's sing. Sorry, I remember.
I'm holding a hardback book. Please don't sing.
No, when a grog serves a magi to the tune of When a Man Loves a Woman, probably isn't my song anyway.
Yeah.
So, when a grog actually kills a magi, which has happened a few times, Claire of Littleport, character played by Pete Clark, used to do it on a regular basis.
She used to walk up behind people and hit them on the back of the head with a quarterstaff to make them be quiet.
She was played as a borderline psychopath who wasn't very bright.
Borderline.
Okay, yeah. She was played as a borderline. Yeah. But I mean, that was... Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was a long time ago. I mean, the thing is, whose responsibility is a hermetic crime committed by a grog? I think that's got to be a matter for the peripheral code, because it doesn't seem to be covered in the main code. Maybe
not
I'm wrong.
That I'm aware of, no. I mean, it's the possibility that you've got is, well, they're employed by your covenant, therefore it comes under the same principle of, you know, magus and apprentice. It's a vague possibility there.
But I don't think the Code of Hermes recognises covenants.
Which is an oddity, considering they're the permanent structure.
Yeah. It doesn't recognise covenants as an institution, as far as I can see. If you look at Wizard's War, you can declare, a whole covenant can declare Wizard's War on another covenant, but the covenant's only referred to in a relation between individuals.
Yeah.
And the Code of Hermes is about governing individuals, not governing covenants. So you can imagine a tribunal where covenants are recognised as legal entities.
Hmm.
But covenants do not appear to be legal entities in the same sense. So I think if you deprive someone of one of... You steal someone's whiz source.
Hmm.
I think
or stocks.
Yeah. But I mean, say you go along and you take the fish from the fairy fountain or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it would have to be an individual who brought the case. I'm not sure. It must vary according to peripheral code. Within the code as written, it's sworn by individuals, not by covenants.
I think it may be a phrasing issue, but I remember in various games where we've had this covenant bringing a suit against this other covenant because they stole their biz source.
Yeah, it is, but it's brought by individuals on behalf of the covenant, perhaps.
Brought by individuals against a group of individuals, so, rather than a specific covenant.
Okay. Here's one for the hermetic lawyers out there. Does the code recognise covenants as legal entities? I haven't got my copy of House of Hermes True Lineages, what I have, but it's buried somewhere here. And by the time
there
I
is one... on the floor,
but by the time I get it, we'll have just caused some strange creaking and me bumping around. There's one to debate.
Yeah. There's also the option of the Sentient Covenant in Covenants. I can't remember what it's called now. The Genius Loci.
As far as I know, a Sentient Covenant cannot swear the oath because it's not gifted. Of course, it could have the gift.
Red Caps aren't gifted, don't they swear?
They do swear, that's right, yeah.
Larta Magi from 4th Ed? I'm not sure if they're still around in 5th.
No, Larta Magi have been largely dropped. They're sort of referenced as an idea, but they don't exist, I don't think, in canon. I could be wrong.
Well, there you go. Red Caps, then. There's one example. And if there's one example, there's probably more.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, let's move on.
Anyway, yes. Where did we get to? Magical power. I will not slay, nor attempt to slay, any member of the Order, except in justly executed and formally declared Wizard's War.
Like Polly's Black Book from the Antiquinatura Saga, which listed all the Magi you knew and interacted with in the back, and all the ones who were dead
in the front, which was the majority of the book.
42 dead Magi in that saga.
Yep, I think there were 6 still surviving that we'd met.
The question is, you know, it's down to your playstyle.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to place a game where your young spring Magi who are not, you know, murder hobos, as the phrase used on RPGNet, who wander around just slaughtering people at random as amoral thugs, which is pretty much what Ars Magica was a reaction to, that kind of D&D, senseless violence, kill people, take their stuff.
Mm.
You know, it could be down to the way in which I run NPCs, probably is intensely irritating.
Yes. Especially servants. Especially ones called Maud.
Wow, Maud's alright, she's got... Yes,
Maud. Please don't.
Maud the cook with her strong Suffolk accent. Yeah.
Yes, and her invention of the thing called a Maud board.
Let's move on. Killing Magi is clearly a no-no.
Yeah, well, that's even down there, so yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, there are circumstances where it's the easy way out, but, you know, it's generally better to embarrass somebody or to cause them a loss of face in Hermetic society or to defeat them by a cunning plan.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, you know, a pile
sometimes
on
the
fire is the...
Sometimes the brute force direct frontline charge works best.
Yeah, and there are stories which revolve around that.
Hmm.
But legitimately, you've got a perfectly legitimate way to kill Magi, so let's carry on with that.
Yep, okay. I hereby understand that Wizard's War is an open conflict between two Magi who may slay each other without breaking this oath, and that should I be slain in a Wizard's War, no retribution shall fall on he who slays me. There's one interesting phrase in that, which is open conflict. It does not mean... everybody else can join in. What it means is it's a public and known about conflict.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And it's usually declared by a red cap, though not absolutely necessarily.
Especially if they don't have to deliver post.
Yeah. I mean, the problem you've got with Wizard's War is it's actually quite difficult to run in a story.
Yeah.
Because assuming that an NPC mage has managed to cleverly acquire an arcane connection to you, which is not that difficult, really.
Usually not, no.
Okay.
Especially if you've wounded him.
Night one, you've worked out what you're going to do. You go and hide in the most powerful agents you can find, perhaps, or you go to try and kill them. They open an intangible tunnel, and it's quite hard for the character at the receiving end to actually cast spells back down it. I thought it was a straightforward ability.
No, it's not.
But it's not. You have to actually be able to sense it and use it. But if you can find the tunnel, you can react.
Mm.
But generally speaking, you can go for the insta-kill scenario. Which is, they've stacked up the weast, they've prepared themselves carefully, they've got an arcane connection to you to bring down your penetration, they do a perdo corpus, you die.
The only problem with that is that the intangible tunnel they're using has to be quite a high level. Because don't forget, it's got to include the penetration you're throwing down there as well.
Yeah, Hermetic Projects has got a great chapter, I think it's Mark Lawford,
The
Wizards, the Assassin Wizard, the Wizard Assassin, which deals with people who can
doing exactly that, yeah.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
And they use low-level spells generally.
Mm.
But even so, Wizards Wars don't usually make for great games, and I don't actually think I've ever run a story about a Wizards War, ironically.
I think we have... No, you have run one about a Wizards War, but we weren't involved. We were being recruited to help out in some capacity. I'm trying to remember what it was.
You've investigated the results of them.
Yeah.
You have also... I remember.
No, it's a long time ago now.
Stories aren't good when they can be resolved very, very quickly where if somebody turns up and kills you, the end, and there's nothing you can do about it. And in Ars Magica, that's always a problem. One of the biggest problems I have with stories, actually, and one of the reasons why I think a lot of people resist... worry of getting attached to their grogs or playing their companions is with no magic resistance, pretty much anything, and you come across something that's got the ability to control minds, change personality traits like a demon, your grogs are so vulnerable, they become a liability.
Yeah, but that's very true.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
So, Wizard's War. Wizard's War is exciting, interesting. No retribution doesn't mean your friends can't declare Wizard's War in response.
No, it doesn't.
And usually in our games, it's the social pressure that stops the Wizard War being declared, because you know that if you, for example, declare a Wizard's War on Darkwing, then Lucius Delbander, Primus of House Flambeau,
his best mate,
is going to come looking for you.
Ornton will just put out a call to his friend, to his house, going, "Guys, we've got a victim."
Okay, well, we're halfway through our allotted time, so we'd better move on.
Okay, all right, I'd better hurry up then. I will abide by the decisions made by fair vote at tribunal. I will have one vote at tribunal, and I will use it prudently. I respect as equal the votes of all others at tribunal. Right, well, obviously that's the part where you've got the special ability of the Tremere kicking in. Other than that, it's fairly standard. Everybody's pretty much using that one. Basically, we are roughly a democracy, and we're working it from that point of view.
There are oddities in the rhyme, but we won't worry about those today.
Exactly. They're very much special cases rather than a general thing.
Yeah.
I will not endanger the order through my actions, nor will I interfere with the affairs of mundanes and thereby bring ruin on my sodales.
Yeah, now the question here is, do you put the emphasis on ruin upon my sodales?
Personally, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we've always argued. So, so long as you're not taking sides and getting the order involved.
Yeah, as long as they know politics, that it's just you and it's not the rest of the order, it's not too much of a problem.
Well, as long as no action you has repercussions.
Mm.
And Ars Magica, I know, 5th edition, it's been stated explicitly, is not a hidden magic game.
Yeah.
We have no equivalent of the Camarilla in Vampire the Masquerade. Yeah. We have no idea of...
The church knows about you, the local order knows about you. The Order of Hermes lore, the skill that lets people know about the Order of Hermes, is a general ability.
Yeah.
Which means the local peasant knows about you, potentially.
Potentially. Yeah. I mean, I think we always play
the 5 XP to get be able to do anything with it.
The Order is... I always assume the Order is as well known as one of the lesser monastic orders.
Yeah, makes sense. It's a good way of thinking about it.
So, there are people who have heard of you. The majority of people have only superstitious ideas. They know there are magicians. They don't know the name of the Order of Hermes.
Yeah.
But some people, maybe some important nobles or clergymen in your area, will know about the Order.
Yeah.
Because they've been exposed to it, because they've heard stories of it.
Yeah.
And you can play it as a hidden magic game.
Mm. Well, it's quite easy to. It fits out nicely, but you don't have to.
No, and it's not the default assumption. The default assumption is something quite different to that. It's not like Mage, where I think magicians hide from mortals, as far as I understand it.
But I think that's because they draw paradox. Like, it's been a while. I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. And in Unknown Armies, again, there's the magicians hide their existence from the mortals in case they rouse the tiger.
Yeah.
And are destroyed, which is a similar kind of concept.
Mm, but we don't have to worry about that on this one, sir.
Interfering with mundanes, however, is interpreted very differently in different tribunals. Normandy has to take it very, very lightly because they live so closely with mundane society.
Yeah.
And the recent supplement Grogs, the chapters by Mark Shirley, seems to take a much harder line on interfering with mundanes than I would normally. I noticed that in the tone when I was reading it. There's an excellent essay in Lords and Men. If you haven't got that supplement, it's almost worth it for the essay. I think it's Timothy Ferguson. And again, I think he takes a more light, a more liberal approach. But it varies. Yeah. It's one of those things you need to discuss. Like, how hidden is the Order? How well known is the Order?
Hmm.
How fast your saga goes?
Yeah.
What theme of your saga is going to be
about? How high magic? How high fantasy?
Yeah, all of these are different things that you can set the sliders to whatever you want for your default. And it might not be the same as any other group's default, but if it works for you and lets you tell good stories, that's what matters.
Exactly, yeah.
And, I mean, you know, I tend to go for a more hidden order, not hidden, but a more reclusive order.
Yeah.
But stress that interfering with mundanes is down to bringing ruin upon your sodales.
Yeah, as opposed to, you went shopping, bad man.
But, of course, it's determined by what the tribunal votes.
Yeah. Because exactly.
It's a political decision, not a matter of justice or following the law.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on.
Right. I will not deal with devils, lest I imperil my soul and the souls of my sodales as well.
And of course, there's the great debate as to whether or not demon hunters are dealing with devils and bringing ruin upon the order.
I think it's down to the word deal. I think what they mean is, I shall not do a Faustian pact.
When we were doing the 30 cases for November, I came up with a number of them. I think I had 17 or 18 in the end of the tribunal cases that last November on the Atlas Games Forum. They're still there. If you just look for case one, case two, you'll find them. And one of them involved an attractive young she-devil, apparently, turning up at a tribunal meeting and wishing to complain about a demon hunter who was rather boastful and overbearing. And it was quite interesting that in character, a lot of people responded in character on the forum, and most of them took the attitude, or a lot of them took the attitude, don't talk to her. Don't even look at her.
There's too many crystals present to get away with that.
Yeah, because we're dealing with a demon.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of a demon showing up at tribunal demanding injustice. But anyway, let's move on with that.
I like the idea of a young Marga pretending to be a demon and turning up instead. Turning up, that's even more funny.
I would just like to note that outside of the game setting, CJ does not approve of dealing with demons or indeed any kind of infernalism. Just in case any members of the moral minority are listening to this. So, okay. Or the Boy Sprouts of America or any other organisation.
Okay. Having got all the legal mumbo-jumbo out of the way, I will not molest the fairies lest their vengeance catch my sodalies also. Now go ahead, the word molest is in this one. Now you need to do the moral minority one. Go on.
We all know what molesting the fae means, and it doesn't mean,
that kind of molest, yeah.
No, though we used to, we have heard jokes about it in the past, but no, do not bother or annoy the fae.
Basically, yeah.
Well, unfortunately, given that in 5th edition the fae's sole interest
is stories.
And messing with you,
yeah,
that's always going to be difficult. Because, again, I think bringing ruin upon your Sodalis is going to be the key point there.
Yeah, I think so, personally.
In a game setting, actually, the way the fae are handled now, I discovered something quite interesting last session, a couple of weeks ago. I think I talked about it in the last game, which was, we had a fae story very, very short-circuited by a player who didn't realise what they were doing by changing the fae story. And that really does alter the way the game works. Anyway, let's move on.
Yep. Okay. Obviously, no mention of the divine in there as well.
Yeah, I think interfering with angels goes without saying.
Well, yeah, you interfere with angels, God will whack you on the back of the head.
If you were even able to, which you're not, because hermetic magic, as I recall, doesn't really.
Meh. No, it's anything about hermetic. Yeah. You've signed the code. You could be a member of House X Misc with all kinds of weird abilities. Right, next bit is, I will not use magic to scry upon members of the Order of Hermes, nor shall I use it to peer into their affairs.
Now, scrying's completely out.
Yeah.
And if scrying's out and seeing what they're up to, then I think giving them Strathan's gift and causing them to go into twilight, giving them warping points is... It's not explicitly stated there.
No.
It's not killing them.
No.
It's not depriving them. It might be depriving them of magical power, but that's only a low crime. But it's clearly not scrying. Scrying, you use forceless penetration. You cast spells with no penetration or penetration
so
zero.
So you don't spot people.
So you don't see them. And it's a very, very odd one that leads to all kinds of very strange situations in reality.
Like, I gave my Grog a cloak of invisibility and he walked through your covenant. Apparently this counts as scrying. So yes.
However, I paid your maid servant to collect your spare tooth after the surgeon pulled it out. Does not count as scrying.
No, because you gave her money. You did not use magic to influence her.
Yeah, it's not magically scrying. So.
No, it's only if you're using magic to find that information that's an issue. You know, wandering around poking at things, that's fine. I will train apprentices who will swear to this code, and should any of them turn against the order and my sedais, I shall be the first to strike them down and bring them to justice.
Interesting bit there is, I will train apprentices. Has anyone ever been prosecuted for not training an apprentice?
No, because you can always say that you're going to later.
Yeah, I'm only 186, and I've
still only got 4 in Vim.
There's a big discussion. Actually, a long time ago, it's an excellent discussion, 2 threads over the last couple of years on how many apprentices and the size of the order up to the Schism War and afterwards. And in that discussion, one of the questions was how many magi do actually train at least one apprentice. I think if you look at modern universities, the emphasis is you must, once you've done your PhD, it is, if you're working in the university, it's expected you will take PhD students.
Yeah.
And 1 is normal, 2 is average, I would guess, these days. Maybe 3 over a long career, but 2 over a short academic career, 3 over a long career. 4 or 5 is exceptional, and 6 is almost unheard of.
Yeah.
And as I think of apprentices as being PhD students, that seems to be a fair analogy.
Yeah.
But there are always going to be people who do not want to train apprentices, or for some reason have got such deeply flawed arts they can't. And I doubt that many tribunals bring them to book for it. But when you've next got a really irritating non-player character who hasn't had trained an apprentice because they've spent all of their time developing the MacMuffin of awesomeness with which they're going to black your covenant,
mm-hmm.
bear that in mind. Take them to tribunal for a low crime of having not abided by the oath.
What do they call it? Nuisance lawsuit or something like that?
Oh, I think it's a nuisance lawsuit.
Just throw a load of them at them instead. Where did I get to? No apprentice of mine shall be called a magus until he first swears to uphold this code.
Yep.
Now, basically, that one is exactly as it sounds. You're not a mage until you've sworn the code.
Yeah, and if you want detail on all of these, I refer you to House of Hermes True Lineage's House Guernicus chapter.
Mm.
Carry on.
There is a bit at this one. At that point, the Bonisagus members say as well, I believe, I shall further the knowledge of the order and share with its members all that I find in my search for wisdom and power.
And the rest of us say...
Okay. Go on, your turn, because I was a Bonnie.
Yeah, Ioannis of Bonisagus. I concede to Bonisagus the right to take my apprentice if he should find my apprentice
Yoink.
Valuable to him in his studies. Thank
Yoink.
You. Bonnie snatching.
Oh, yes. Calls it. It's not just me, there's a whole load of people who are calling it that as well.
Right.
Yes. The Privil Code basically extends Bonisagus' right to claim apprentices to followers of Bonisagus. There are weird bits of how that works and things, but I'm pretty sure they're form threads, and if we want to, we can go over that later, I guess. I request that should I break this oath, I be cast out of the order. If I am cast out of the order, I ask my Sodales to find me and slay me, that my life not continue in degradation and infamy.
But enough of them. Enough of my players. Yes. No, jokes aside.
There's still more. No, I can keep going unless you want to. The enemies of the order are my enemies. The friends of the order are my friends. The allies of the order are my allies. Let us work together as one and grow hale and strong. And then it's this oath I hereby swear on the, in this case, third day of Pisces in the 950th year of Aries. Woe to they who try to tempt me to break this oath, and woe to me if I succumb to the temptation.
It's interesting that, because the whole Age of Aries and Age of Pisces and you know, the astrological year stuff actually was dropped in 5th edition.
Yeah, and it's still in the code because it was...
Because it's from an earlier edition and was probably maybe cut and pasted, or because it's still used in the code.
But I mean,
I quite like it, it's quite atmospheric. I can't remember how it works anymore properly. I can work it out opening my 2nd and 3rd edition.
There's a song, we're in the Age of Aquarius. I think we've just about hit it and it was in the 70s.
Actually, astrologers disagree on when it starts, and it's any time in the 60s, 50s, 80s, 90s. You know, it depends how you work
2100, it depends where you start.
Processions out because of the...
To the actual game.
Yeah. Enough of the fifth dimension, they're the ones who did it for the musical Hair.
Oh, that's it, thank you. I knew I knew the name. So yes, that's the actual code itself. The oath itself.
So, what are the actual implications for the game then? As I say, should you sit down with your players when you actually describe the game? Because this is probably the one thing, apart from there are 12 houses, they live in covenants, you know, there are 12 types of magician, you can belong to one of those houses, they live in covenants, work together, they swear to a hermetic oath. I mean, once you've read that oath and you've talked through the implications, the players have got the whole really important background for the game, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, I would suggest sort of giving them a brief overview of the legal side of things, as in how the code actually works, in the sense of, you know, this is a low crime, this is a high crime, you'll get hit with a big fine for this, you'll get beheaded for that, that kind of thing.
Everybody knows that. Giving people a copy of the Hermetic Oath.
Oh yeah, even if you don't have Code of Hermes, you've read that oath.
I think I might print it out and just hand it to my next group of new players so they can always refer back to what they have seen.
I did hand it to my last batch, so yes, it is a very good way of doing it.
I think, you know, you're going to have to discuss to what extent the tribunal you're playing in and to what extent you think that the characters would obey the oath instinctively and would attempt to avoid the whole loopholes breaking it thing. Because I actually think that a lot of Hermetic Magi, it would never occur to them, player characters included, they would try and abide by the rules in the same way that when I'm irritated by somebody's dice rolls, I do not murder them on the spot these days. I try to wait until later when I can bury them under the patio.
Yeah, when you've got the quicklime.
I've got the quicklime, But, I mean, jokes aside, you know, it's not actually because I'm worried about being caught, it's because I'm fundamentally law-abiding, because I'm not But we're getting back to Houses of Hermes, Society Artists, and the different two to them.
Yeah.
Philosophies here.
Exactly.
Great chapter, really worth reading.
Yeah, oh yeah. I basically recommend all of the House of Hermes books anyway. Well,
Kev, we managed to make you Janus swear the Code of Hermes.
He'd only done it twice before.
Is he going to maintain it?
He was never the one who broke the code.
And so he was argued for the tribunal.
He was the defence for the rest of them, because nobody else had bloody Code of Hermes.
Ladies, gentlemen, Grogs and Fae, we've run out of time for today. This has been Arcane Connection, episode number 8, the one in which Janus swears the code. I'm CJ, and this is...
Hiya, I'm Kevin. Have fun, and speak to you soon, I'm sure.
Yep, take care.